Accession number 18357, real one.
Tom Carew, real one. Where were you born, please?
Dublin. Dublin in Ireland.
Which year was this?
1919.
Were your parents Irish or not?
Yes. Yes, they're both Irish.
Did you grow up and have your education in Dublin?
No. We were thrown out by the Sinn Féiners, and we came over quite quickly, I think, but probably in 1921 to England, because my father had been in the Navy during the war. And he would... because he'd been in the Navy, he was at risk. And my mother had married a man who got killed in the Battle of Mons in 1914. And so I have two stepbrothers, who both brothers in the army. And so we're very highly connected to the British world. And so they really scarpered back to England.
But were they literally thrown out of Ireland?
Well, my father was going around with a pistol in his hip pocket and that sort of thing.
So, where did you grow up in England?
Mainly in Cambridge. Cambridge. Went to a marvelous school in Cambridge called the Perth School. And I went as a day boy, and my brother went as a day boy. And that I'm very grateful for, because so many of my class all went off to public school. We hadn't got enough money for that anyway. But they all went off to public school, and they had all those boarders and all the things. And I was a day boy, so I was very free. I cycled every day to school and back again, not least these boys in buses. And I would stop off at Heffer's bookshop, and I got more education out of Heffer's bookshop in Cambridge than I did from school, so somehow. I remember well the two books were Boswell's Life of Johnson, and most important was Plato's Life of Socrates, which I read out of second hand. I used to read the chapter standing up, put it back underneath so it wasn't bought, and then come back the next day and continue reading it. But they didn't have that sort of book at school. But we were very, 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 very liberal school. It was quite famous at the time, and still is, the Perth School. But the great thing was about that I was a day boy, and I had no other problem of being a boarder. And so, and I think that throughout my life, that freedom remained with me. And the army didn't understand it, because when I became an army officer before the war, I went to Woolwich, what we call the shop, where the gunners and sappers went. Because my brother went to the army, I didn't know where to go to, what to do. So I went to there. And I think there was only one other boy, it was a day boy. All the other were public school boys, the officers in those days. And
how old were you when you went to the shop?
How old?
How old?
17. And then... And I passed in reasonably in the middle of the lot, but I passed out bottom, and was well bottom. In fact, I was told by the governor, who was then a man called Philip Nee, VC, and a man I'll come to later on, Bob Mansack, was the adjutant, and I was had up before them right at the end and told, except that they'd had a order from the War Office to commission all officers because of the oncoming war. He would in no way commission me. He said, well, the worst cadet we have ever had. Which was, of course I was, because I can remember being asking why we had to polish boots off training. And the answer came back, see, you can do it. So foolishly, I just polished one. Sure, I could do it. When I look back on it, I really was a terrible. I wasn't. I was very a loner. I wasn't a leader of people. I didn't cause any trouble. I just questioned everything.
Were you what they call bolshy?
No, I wasn't bolshy. I was kind of nice guy. I wasn't. I always have been a nice guy, you know. But I didn't see. But I have always respected logic and truth and reality, and I'm not conable. I don't con anybody else, you know. And to be told it's he would do, I polish my boots. Just pure people absurd.
So what did you do after you'd been told you weren't going to get the commission?
Oh, they did. They commissioned me. Because they had an order from the War Office or whatever, then they couldn't drop me back because they were closing down the shop, and it never opened again. I was the last cadet that ever passed through Woolwich.
When were you commissioned?
Straight away in 1939 to 1938, something like that.
Just before the war?
Yeah.
Which particular unit did you go in?
I went to the gunners.
And what were you doing when war was declared?
I was in the ECAC, I think. Oh, no, I was doing courses. I was on courses. We were on courses in Luck Hill. You know? I remember that, you see. I remember them had these, what's called a director in the gunners, where you point the guns, in order to get the guns pointing in the right direction, you have this thing called a director, which helps point it. And it's really cool. That's in those groups. Not complicated nowadays, but quite complicated then. And we were lectured, and the man started to lecturing, say, here's the eyepiece, and this, that, and the other. He went all through the pieces, holding it in his hand. All I wanted to do was touch it and see it and play with it, you see. And they wouldn't let me, you know, they wouldn't let me. And so I refused to learn, listen to what this is going on. If I could pick it up, I would have understood it in 10, in 5 minutes. And but they wouldn't let me. All the instructors who were officers, majors, captains, majors, were quite determined to, in the end, to get me. And I never answered why. And I remember they came to say that we all had to do a lecture. I'll tell you another story. These stories boring you all there.
Please, tell me.
Well, as a boy, I started very badly. And it took a long time to overcome that. And I never really finally overcame it. But for the last big thing about stuttering, I learned to switch words so that I didn't use the stuttering word. And occasionally sometimes I do now, but not really. And we had to give a lecture to there were tiered lecture rooms where the people all sit in and their person would declaim the lecture. They had no idea how to teach the army people. They had no idea. We had to give, at the end of term, we had to give a dissertation on the battle of something or other. And I forgot what it was, battle of Marengo, I think, something like that. Napoleon. Well, in my view of Napoleon, he was the worst general ever. He seemed to have lost all his battles, but the army thought he was marvellous. But I listed the battles he lost. But you know, I think the French were conned the Brits into believing he was a great soldier, but he wasn't. He scarpered from Russia, and he scarpered. He wasn't a good soldier. Anyway, I remember I was selected to give a dissertation on one of these battles. And they gave me something to read out what I was going to dissert. Unfortunately, it was full of words I couldn't say. Now, nobody knew I stuttered. Well, not really at that stage. At that stage, I'd been overcoming it, and I could get away with it by stopping it. I've changed my words now, even to this day. But there was a word I couldn't say, and so I switched to Carew, read the question properly, and then I was halt, and they didn't know I stuttered, and I'm very surprised. They were absolutely furious with what I said. Carew, sit down. And in those days, they could get a lot of distaste in the word Carew. You can really come out really so I wasn't very good at these things, and they're quite right to him. What I mean, I was told to learn German. Well, I don't like German then, and don't to this day. And I didn't learn hardly a word of German. I didn't like it. And I don't think I was a suitable person for the army, to be truthful. Anyway, This happened, and I survived that. But that was the last time I really stuttered. And after that, do you know a lovely story? When I got to the gunnery school after being commissioned, I was in Menabir, Wales, and there again. They were quite pretend to get me. We all had to lecture on some piece of equipment. We were given a piece of equipment and to lecture on it. I was given a breech block, which I had never seen before. Not a faint idea. I don't know how well I was given it just to really get it on. So I said, I well remember this. I said, right, sir, can I treat this to those people I'm lecturing as sergeants? And he said, yes. Of course you can. Yeah, that's right. Right. You're a lot of size. You've seen this block. You know quite well. Now, I want to know if you can strip it down. What's the first thing you do when you strip this block down? So I didn't touch the damn thing. I've got the whole task to strip it down and put it together again. And I didn't touch it. And the lecturer, he had to laugh at the end of it. That was not going to a boarding school. When I think of people like Prince Charles and people like that, if they hadn't gone to boarding school, they wouldn't be like that. We have great belief in them in this country. I never believed it at all, ever.
How did you feel when you heard Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I don't know how I felt at that time, but since then, I've always thought that he had no alternative, and he played for time, and he got it sometime. And I think to have declared war at that time would have been disastrously bad, worse than anything else. And I always thought that he was right to do what he did.
To play for time at Munich?
To believe. I mean, you've got to go on believing these things, because you never know whether something might turn out good. But at least you're playing for time. So again, there was another one. I was a complete loner. For the army. I could see that the army was not prepared. And what the hell's the point of having a politician say, let's go to war? We're not a sufficient state to go to war.
I think that you took part in the Norway campaign in 1914?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I think it was the first way they could get me. I didn't know, I never thought of that. Yes, I went up there, and I enjoyed that. I had a marvellous time there, to be truthful. That was my first real
thing. What unit were you in then?
Anti-aircraft.
Do you remember the name of the unit?
82nd, or some number like that. I can't remember.
Why did you have such a marvellous time in Norway?
Because I was on my own. I had two guns, and we were trying to pull. We had these things called scammels, these lovely, big, great, big, powerful things pulling guns through. I loved that. And I was a second lieutenant, and I had two sergeants with me. One was Barber. I loved that duck. What's the other one? Robert Barber. And because they were good to me. They were experienced people. They were builders and that sort of thing, you know. Mostly came from South End, Territorial Army. And I realized they knew what they were doing. And all I did was support them, although they were sergeants. And that's what I was meant to be, an officer. I was wise enough because I liked them, you know. And looking back at it now, you ask the question, it was my first touch of civilian life. Because my father, this is my father over there, that picture over there, he never did a stroke of work when I was young. Never. He wasn't rich either, but I don't know, he never felt like working. And I never had no civilian experience at all, ever. I didn't realize what it was. And my mother used to talk about counter jumpers and a person who she worked in the shop. So, anyway, I went to Norway. And there was a lot, and that I enjoyed. I enjoyed that. We were totally alone. And I tell you what, now then, this is interesting. I haven't told this story to anybody who mattered. I reckon we must have shot down the first German plane. We had two guns, and it was permanent daylight then. And we were probably parked at dinner, and one man turned up, was the local, the parish Catholic priest. And I'll tell you about him in a minute. I'm remembering all this stuff. I've thought about it for years. Anyway, this sergeant, well, I said, look, that damn, the Germans, you know, the Germans always do the same thing every day, the same. I said, do they? He said, yes. They're always coming over that mountain top every day on reconnaissance. And we said, look, if we're careful, we can plan it, plot this out, and we can have a go at him. Which we did, and we got him. And it was, of course, it went down over the mountain or something like that and everything else. But it really was a fabulous success. And that was right at the beginning of the war. I don't think to this day I've ever told him. I don't think in those days we didn't claim anything. Or that was short we should have done.
Whereabouts in Norway were you?
Right at the top. Tromsø, that's the name of the strikes of Cornwall. But we were in field. When we did have some people killed, you couldn't make a grave. You couldn't get through into the ground. We got bombed for doing that. And we had a person killed. Couldn't bury him, but it was all solid ice. And we had this lovely priest. He was a Roman, typical, marvellous Roman Catholic village policeman. And he was great. A village parson. And he said, Tom, I want one of the old lorries. I said, what do you mean you want one? I can't give you one. He said, no, I'll bring it back again. I want a couple of men, two or three men, and I've got something important to be done. I said, there's no priest. What do you want? He said, never mind what I want. And so he would naturally, I gave it to him, and he disappeared for days, you know. When he came back, he came with this lorry completely full of beer from Tromsø. Absolutely, beer. But he'd dishing out all the boys, everything. And he was a marvellous. He was a very fat man, scruffy fat man. And he was great that way. And so he was fun. So that little group of people, the parson and my fellows, who were all, they were Territorial Army people from Southend. They all joined up together. And we had a marvellous time. And then we were recalled. Of course, the war was we were recalled from Norway, and we were put on a boat. I forgot the name of it now. I might be able to remember it. And we all went home. But I was so bad then. I didn't shave properly. I don't know why. I remember someone on the boat getting rather angry about that. Anyway, that when we got back, we were put on a golf course, and the parson disappeared one day. An Italian just came in the war, And there were some Italian people who he knew this Glasgow area himself personally. And he went off into Glasgow, a few miles away. And when he came back, he was covered in blood and he was a mess. So what the hell have you been doing? And he said, I've had it. What he'd been doing, he didn't tell us properly what he did. But what he did do, he opened a whole lot of altar wine, and pulled a cork on the altar wine. We all had a drink of the altar wine. He said, oh, I just sort of these dust weeds around. What had happened? The Italians just come in the war, and there were some Italian people that he knew about, Catholics, naturally. And he knew about them, and their shops were being raided and broken into by the mob because the Italians come in the war. And we heard afterwards that he stood there in front of the shop and with his belly sticking out and said, anybody who wants to go to the shop will go through me. So there was a delightful group of people. Then we were sent off straight away to Gibraltar.
And that was the same unit?
What?
The same.
The same unit, yeah, same unit. 82nd Regiment. That's right, 82nd Regiment, I think. So we went off to Gibraltar. And there we were stayed, I don't know how long, but a long time. And then once again, we were in the area, I met the Gibraltarians, civilian Gibraltarians. And I liked them. Well, I liked them. I just liked civilians, because I found you could talk to civilians, and they'll listen to you, and there seemed to be a bit more logic in their world. Because the army at that stage was still wearing, I remember when I had to wear and put on putties. And I said, well, what the bloody hell are these putties for? Nobody could give me an answer why we put on putties. I said, well, they must stop, because we can't march in putties. And then the weight of the rifle, I said, God, why do we have got these heavy rifles? It was, you only fire a short distance. They were marvelous at 500 yards, but when you fired, checked up on this, and nobody had ever killed anybody at 500 yards with a rifle. You know, 100 yards is about the usual distance range, and so on. And there was lots of problems in the army. Was this, I want to know why. And there we are. Anyway, went to Gibraltar, and that was good in a way. I liked it because my first contact with civilians, which I come to later on, and we were there, and I had a gun sight right on the south. Again, I had small guns, rather good. Young Sobleton had his own little gun sight, a couple of guns or four guns. And there I learned how to move heavy guns, which I loved. With levers and lifting, you've got the people working with ropes and levers. I adored that. And then, there again, they were talking, these planes, the French planes were coming over then on reconnaissance. That was the war that got that far. And, yes, again, I was. We were told we must go shoot something down. So what we did was we got cotton wool and we made some puffs and hung it against the side. And we all had these model planes for identification. They were very good models, and we had a very good model maker. We had so much talent in that little dozen, 15 or 18 soldiers, all civilians. It was marvelous. Model making is one of them. They did a model of a French reconnaissance train. I've come to the world, and they hung it up. They were with these cotton wool puffs, and we claimed we'd shot it down and took photographs of it and see it against the cloud. And everybody believed it. You find if you look up the reports in Gibraltar that the shots were shot down. They never were shot down. Anyway, rumours used to get around. You see what went on in that place called South Battery. I've forgotten that from that day to this. South Battery it was. And I had visited. And there I learned that we had one couple who were homosexual. And I realized that I'm not at all, don't forget, don't misunderstand me, I have nothing to say about it at all. But then I had a pretty batman and a very intelligent clerk, nice guys, nice boys, so good company. Once or twice, some people got down in Gibraltar, were sent to prison because amongst the Gibraltarians, there's some pretty. People. That was in days when the sin of being a homosexual was incredible. And of course, nowadays there's nothing. That happened to a lot of people. Looking back on it, I thought everybody who had a batman or a stove or someone close to them, they usually was a pretty lad or attractive lad. Why not? And I remember that. What else happened in Gibraltar? It went a long time, bored. Yes, it was there that very boring it was. All the women had been evacuated. Yes, I got into trouble. Yes, this lovely team, this lovely gun sight of mine, were all good fellows. And they had a hockey competition. We played, but I bent my knee the wrong way. Also, playing rugby. I was very bad. I wasn't athletic, never have been. But I bent my knee the wrong way around, and that landed up in hospital. And again, you see, I happened to find I had a stopwatch. I didn't know what day I had a stopwatch. But then they said to me, you're not allowed to leave your bed at all. It's very serious. You've got to go ahead and do it, not use the knee. Well, I couldn't use a bloody bedpan. I just hated it. I wasn't going to use it. So I had to wait till the decimal guy to crawl to the loo and one leg and a foot or something. But then the matron in charge of the ward liked her drink or two. So we always got managed to get some drink in. And in the afternoon, she was having a nice rest. And so I arranged for us to push all the beds in the middle. And they gave me a chair. They realized they couldn't to make me lose it. The best thing, but they gave me a chair. And I was the only person who said, when you go to surgical ward, everybody's quite well. There's nobody ill, you know. It's full of unpent ability wandering around there. And mine had the idea of pushing all the beds in the middle and having a time brace with all the stopwatch on my chair. I had a chair, so we took turns in the chair to go around there against time. And one of them was quite a mess. We started putting a bookies board up. And we were caught, of course. Found out. And they said they allowed up full general for that. No, not the general, the number two, the troops. Yes, worse than that. I was up for that, sir. No. Then we had only a gunsight where we had 15 people in America. But we had some of them were quite good, they were hockey players. And so we had our own hockey team, and it was pretty good, but there were not all that number of them. So by that time they realized I was no good, not worth keeping me in hospital because they couldn't do it. So they put my leg in solid plaster and said, right, you can make your size. That's screw. Well, we got it to that. My team was doing quite well. And we hadn't got any spare. So we had about 11 people to fill the team or something like that. So I said, that's all right. I'll go and play in goal. It'd be all right, but I haven't done that with stiff leg. I'm playing goal, which we won two races, two level, and then when Dick's going was against the medical corps, who should be the centre forward? But by the surgeon, who had put me into plaster, and he saw me and he threw me off. He had me taken away out of the team. I did perfectly well. I had plaster solid, but no, he. And there was another problem I had. I'll tell you what, the last one. The last one was the petrol. I got a car. Eventually, I got an old Ford. I don't know how I got it. Nobody else was allowed a car. Anyway, I got one. I remember now, our gun sight was, we had to go all the way around the rock to get to it, and it was very difficult to get to it and so on. So I got an old Ford. And of course, got no petrol. But we were in a on our gun side, there was a cave, which naturally would be walled up. And he said, for the thing. So I said, come on, let's see what's in this cave. We were not told what was in it. We found it was full of petrol, the big barrels. And by the time I learned how to use ropes, I'm still to this day quite good with ropes. And the hell of that. And so we got a petrol. He rolled it up, pulled it all the way out over the top, and we had our petrol. Nobody else had petrol. They were limited. And so somehow it got blown. So I was up there for the general. It was very serious. But unbeknownst to me, that was very serious. But